Welcome, dear readers. You are listening to Time to Read, a Winnipeg Public Library podcast book club. We are recording today from the Millennium Library in Winnipeg, which is within Treaty 1 territory, the traditional lands of the Anishinaabe, Cree, and Dakota, as well as the birthplace of the Métis Nation and the heart of the Métis homeland. Our drinking water comes from Shoal Lake 40, First Nation, in Treaty 3 territory. In this episode, we are celebrating books, nerd words, and the fact that we've made it to 50 episodes. I'm Alan, and across the table from me is...
Alan, what are you doing?
I'm introducing the episode.
But you're not the host anymore. You're a special guest.
Oh, I'm not? Okay, well, just like one more time, for old time's sake.
Okay. I'm Dennis from the Idea Mill, and I'm only here because I know how to edit audio. Across the table from me is...
I'm Trevor from the Louis Riel Library, and I'm only here because I showed up to a couple of meetings, and now it's 50 episodes later. And across the table from me is...
I'm Toby. I'm an outreach librarian based out of Millennium Library, and I really feel like I'm sitting at the cool table right now. And across the table from me is...
Hi, I'm Kirsten, and I'm from Harvey Smith Library. And I'm only here because I missed all you cool cats.
I was going to say, Kirsten, what are you doing here?
I know. I'm so proud of you.
A good book can carry me away from an average and ordinary day. Yeah. So keep it down, leave me alone. Close the doors and turn off the phone. Because all I ever really need.
And you, dear readers, we wouldn't do this without you. If you weren't listening, we'd stop talking, or at least we'd stop recording it and putting it online. Probably. You can find our email address and all our social media outlets by going to wpl-podcast.winnipeg.ca and scrolling to the bottom of the page. As you probably noticed from the intro, this is not going to be a typical episode for us. Instead of talking about a particular book, today we are marking the 50-episode milestone. As part of that celebration, we invited past Time to Read hosts to join us. For those who only recently started listening, Alan and Kirsten were part of the original podcast team before moving on to other projects. So, how are you guys doing?
Good. The OG, right?
Is the that what OG.
You say? The
yeah.
OG.
The OG. Yeah. I feel remiss if I didn't mention where I am now and what projects I'm on. So I'm from Red River College Polytechnic. We're a polytechnic now, in case you didn't see all the billboards.
No, didn't actually. And
that's much better than a monotechnic.
Yes.
Is that like a polymath?
No. Oh.
Polyamorous.
Polyamorous. Yes. It's Valentine's.
So maybe find poly words. I should have used a poly word for
a polygon.
For a nerd word. Yeah. I guess you could say I'm polygon now.
And that's the polynomial.
And just a quick reference to last month's episode, Pollyanna.
Oh. Yes.
It was a book mentioned.
Mm-hmm. And you, Kirsten?
I'm great. Thanks, Dennis.
Well, we know that.
I was listening to a few of the past episodes this morning, and it just made me so happy to hear everyone's voices and just reminded me of a whole bunch of memories that I hadn't remembered. So it was great. Yeah. So I encourage everyone to kind of go back and listen to some of those past episodes. They were good.
Some of them were actually good. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So because this is our 50th episode, we opted not to just discuss one book like we used to do or usually do and will do again. And instead, we're just going to talk about books in general. We're going to start with the question that everyone hates to try to answer. Mm-hmm. What's your favorite book of all time?
There were some good responses on our social media.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was just pulling that up just as an icebreaker. We got quite a lot of responses to that. Okay, so let's see here. Wild by Cheryl Strayed. The Seamstress by Sarah Bernstein. The Stone Diaries. Anne of Green Gables. Little Women. Jane Eyre. A Tree Grows in Brooklyn. The Outsiders. The Night Circus. The Hobbit. Wuthering Heights. Another Jane Eyre. To Kill a Mockingbird.
Mm-hmm. We've done one of those.
On Facebook, again, The Hobbit got some love. And The Grapes of Wrath. John Steinbeck, The Left Hand of Darkness by Ursula Le Guin, which we haven't read in the podcast, but we have read one of her stories at the Tales at Night, I think.
Yeah,
she's pretty great. And Bride's Head Revisited by Evelyn Waugh. And a newer book, The Once and Future Witches by Alex Harrow. So quite a interesting variety offered by our listeners.
I will give a thumbs up to Wuthering Heights, also a fantastic song by Kate Bush, which inspired me to read the book. And The Night Circus is an interesting one. Like, I read it. It was good, but a lot of people love it. So, yeah.
Yeah. Of the list of the ones that people read, I have to give a big thumbs up to Kill a Mockingbird. I remember reading that for the first time, and it was one of the most beautifully written books I'd ever read. It's one of those things where my ambitions to be an author someday were really shattered because I thought there's no way I can write like this. Like, this is fantastic. And then I read a Daniel Steele novel after that, and I thought, I can do it. Anybody can write a book.
I've never read To Kill a Mockingbird, but I did see a stage version of it a few years back at MTC, which was phenomenal. And they used not just the stage, but the entire theater as part of the set, unbeknownst to me, that I was sitting in maybe the second row or something, which also doubled as the gallery for the courthouse. So partway through the play, a couple of the characters in character brushed by me and sat on either side of me and were like interacting with what was going on the stage. And then I thought, oh, it's too late for me to actually check my ticket. Like, am I in the right row? Like, was this blocked off somehow and I just walked in? So it was a very, very excellent production.
I thought you were going to say, and at that moment, I thought maybe I could be an actor.
No, I was terrified. It's like, what's going to happen next?
I would totally watch a play you were in.
Me too. I think it's so hard to come up with favorite books. And I think that this kind of came up when you guys did 100 Years of Solitude. You did that.
Love in the Time of Cholera.
Yeah. Because 100 Years of Solitude is another one of my favorites, what I would say would be my favorites. But that was like, you know, 25 years ago. And so I almost like don't want to reread these books because it was the time and place that they became favorites for me. Because I think you had the same, situation.
That's an interesting take on it. Like, because that is something we've experienced in different scenarios. But I'm going to say my favorite book of all time is The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Oh. I'm okay rereading it because, like, I don't normally reread books, but I've reread Hitchhiker's Guide at least a half dozen times over the years, from when I was a teen to just when we did it on the podcast recently. So I know that one holds up.
Thought you were going to say I know that one by heart.
No, I do know a lot of the lines, though.
When you say you've read it half a dozen times or so, have you read the entire series that many times? Like, when you've read it, do you go through, or is it particularly the first book that you're thinking of?
When I first read it, the whole series had not been published yet. So I've reread the first one half a dozen times, and then the others, like each time a new book came out, I read the ones before it and then read it. And then, so I guess the fourth book in the trilogy, to use the proper terminology for Hitchhiker's Guide, I probably only reread three times. And I have not read the fifth one because it wasn't by Douglas Adams, so I'm not counting it as part of the series, even though his estate okayed it and everything. It's like the four, that's the trilogy to me.
Estates are weird, man. Like, the way they morph someone's life afterwards. I'm thinking of Bob Ross, who was like, you know, hid his paintings away in vaults. And now, like, there's Bob Ross everything. There's Bob Ross magic cards and board games and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think Kafka also was like, told his friend to burn all of his stuff when he was dying. And we all know how that worked out.
Terry Pratchett said something like that to Neil Gaiman. Like, there was something that he wanted destroyed. I think run over by like a tractor or something. And Gaiman did it. He followed through with his wishes. I'm going to have the details wrong, I'm afraid. But there was something Terry Pratchett wanted destroyed, and Neil Gaiman followed through for him.
True friend.
Yeah.
I mean, if someone told me to run over something with a tractor.
Or a bulldozer or something like that, like heavy machinery, you know?
Well, like many of us, maybe all of us, trying to define what our favorite book is a difficult thing. So I was trying to think, well, what kind of metric do I use? And I think I use something similar to you, Dennis. I have an actual answer and kind of a cop-out answer. So I have two different books. So my actual answer, I had to think of, what is the book that I've read the most times? And it actually is The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey, which is a, I guess you'd call it like a, maybe a personal self-help rubric that originally came out. I didn't realize this in 1989, and it kind of lays out steps of how you can kind of organize your own thoughts and habits and how you interact with other people. Now, I can see the skepticism on everyone's face. You're saying, Trevor, but you don't do anything. True. But if I ever did, I would be very effective.
Mm-hmm.
But so that's my real answer. My sham answer is that, well, my favorite book is whatever book I'm reading right now. Mm. And the book I'm reading right now is called My Heart is a Chainsaw by Stephen Graham Jones, which I brought. First book I've ever read by this guy. Super interesting guy. Yeah, an American, part of the Blackfoot community, also a professor of English, and he writes hardcore horror novels. And so this particular book, My Heart is a Chainsaw, takes place in this little town in Idaho where the main character, Jade, she's 15 years old, and she loves slasher films, especially the ones from the 70s and 80s. And she has had a traumatic upbringing, and she escapes into these movies, and she is convinced that a slasher cycle is about to start in her hometown. All the signs are there, and she knows her own character. She's not a final girl. She doesn't have the strength to be the final girl, but a new girl moves into town, and she says, that's the final girl, and I have to educate her in horror tropes so that she can survive.
Don't run up the stairs.
Yeah, exactly. And so as you can see, I've only got a little bit left. It's right at the part where the bodies are all being discovered.
Oh,
it's amazing, and I'm thoroughly enjoying it. I have a feeling that, like every good great slasher, it's probably going to have a sequel and a sequel and a sequel, right. I'm hoping. So anyway, that is my current favorite book. Until I pick up another book after this one. Yeah.
I like that you used the phrase the final girl too, because I just recently saw the movie Final Girls, which is like one of these horror comedy type things, which is kind of goofy and preposterous, but much scarier than you expect when you start to see it. And it was amazing. Mm. If you like Cabin in the Woods, then The Final Girls is just fantastic.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, this book, if you're a fan of like movies that are self-referential, like the Scream series or Cabin in the Woods, then I think you would enjoy this very much.
I was just thinking about Scream, and I want to know if they like dissect Scream in that book, because that kind of had a similar
All four of them. Well, there's five Screams now, but when this book came out, there were four.
So that makes me really want to read it, because that's very meta.
Yeah.
I actually did also have a second favorite book in terms of a book that had an impact on me, like maybe Seven Habits did for you, but it was The Demon Haunted World, Science is a Candle in the Dark by Carl Sagan. Carl Sagan was a great science popularizer. This was his pitch for the scientific method as the best way to approach the world and to get ourselves out of ignorance. And it came at a point in my life where I was trying to sort out what I thought and what I believed and how I wanted to interact with the world. So Demon Haunted World, we still have it in the collection. It's a great book.
It's interesting. I put down a couple titles, and I guess without really thinking it through about metrics, I must have been doing very similar things to you, Trevor, because I went back to, what one have I like read multiple times? And it's 84 Charing Cross Roads. And I think because it's so small, and I love books that are centered around letters. And I don't know, I just really kind of love that story. And it's sort of maybe a bit of a comfort read, although I never read things over again, or rarely. And then the other one that had an impact on me is the Rebecca Solnit Wonderlust, The History of Walking. Mm. That's had like sort of a profound impact on me over the last, I'd say, 15 years, probably, both in our collection.
So I have a question for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Does anyone care to guess what my favorite book is?
I hope it's not Infinite Jest.
I know, I just seeing it on your
Is it? Oh no, Alan.
No, I'll give everyone a hint. It was
the first episode.
Oh,
it was Oryx and Crake.
Oh, right.
And we started with your very favorite book.
Right.
And I have a bone to pick with you, Alan, because Oryx and Crake is part of a trilogy.
Yes.
And the first book in the trilogy is your favorite book of all time.
Yes.
Yet you have not read books two or three.
No, I've read book two. Oh. Didn't like it, and that's what scared me off book three.
Amazing. So you went from your favorite book of all time to a huge disappointment.
Yes.
I don't want to see. I've read all three. Mm-hmm. I think they get better. Honestly, I think the second one's better than the first one, and the third one brings it home. Personally, that's me. But So anyway.
So I should be on the lookout for disappointment should I ever read that.
Yeah, you'll have even more.
Actually, and since you brought up like a trilogy where you like the first one and maybe not so much the others, I got to mention Robertson Davies' The Fifth Business, which I read that book on the suggestion of my brother, and I thought it was incredible. Mm-hmm. It was an amazing piece of fiction. Yeah. And then I said, and I was telling him I really enjoyed it and I'm going to read the rest of the series. And he's like, don't. He's like, it just don't.
I've heard the same thing. I've also read it and it was fantastic. And I've heard not to read the rest. And I've listened to that advice.
Yeah, I think the first one is so good at capturing the essential story mm-hmm. that all the rest will just come across as filler. But The Fifth Business itself, definitely a good read.
I don't know what you guys think about this, but you know how they often will say The Lord of the Rings is a trilogy, but you know, it's actually six books because mm-hmm. each book has two books in it. And it's not really a trilogy because it's one big story, I would say. Yet, having said that, I love The Fellowship of the Ring and I can't even deal with the third part. And the second part I just find is Boringsville. I found that when I read the books. I've read The Fellowship of the Ring a bunch of times. And then when the movies came out, I've seen the first movie a bunch of times. I love it. But the other two I've seen once in the theater, and then that's it. So I don't know. That's weird, right?
No, I think that happens.
Huh. Yeah. It's probably more pretty common in trilogies, I would imagine, where
it's hard to sustain the quality of a trilogy. Mm-hmm. Like, because especially you come out hot out of the gate and it's amazing and everyone loves it. And then they want at least that good for the next one. But it's like, if you poured your heart into the first one, you know, can you do it again? It's
years often too into that first one. And then you're supposed to churn out the second one in like,
because writing is not easy. Like writing is a lot of struggle for many authors to really get it out there and to do that over and over again in a row.
Well, I think part of it too is like, I think there's a lot of cases where there's never intended to be a sequel, like from the author's perspective, but it like blows up and then, you know, there's, you know, all this money and fans like just clamoring for more. So
and the publisher.
Publisher. Yeah.
Capitalism. So, yes.
But speaking of metrics, because we've talked about Orcs and Crake like on a whole episode, so it's like we don't need to talk about that again. But I did have another metric for favorite books of all time, and that was books that movies were based on. So my favorite book that has a movie is Requiem for a Dream by Hubert Selby Jr., which I was obsessed with the movie when I was younger, which is it's a good movie, but a very heavy and very dark movie. So don't watch it with your mom in the room. but the book is amazing.
Can you read the book with your mom in the room?
I mean, as long as she's not reading it out loud. But it's about how drugs affect the lives of several different characters. Like there's a mom and a son and a son's girlfriend and a son's best friend, and they all get caught up in like different types of drugs, and you kind of watch the spiral of their lives go down the drain.
Cheery. Uplifting.
Yes.
And now you're all staring at me. My favorite book of all time is Birds of America by Laurie Moore. So I have learned from this podcast that past me is not to be trusted. Love in the Time of Cholera as the example.
We still like past you.
Okay. All right. Good. So I recognize that when I first read this book, I was in a different time in my life. I was in my 20s. I was a grad student. I was single. And this book really resonated with me. I felt a real kinship to the characters in this book. But even now, when I'm older and hopefully wiser, I still love this book. It still holds a very sacred place in my heart. So this is a book of short stories. Many of these were previously published in like the New Yorker and Harper's and the Paris Review. So like these are quality stories. They're not just any random stories. What I love about Moore, and this is very specific to me, but she writes what I feel like is my internal monologue or what I think like. So these stories are primarily about female protagonists, and they're all kind of caustic and witty and high-strung and self-conscious, which is maybe me a bit in a nutshell, except for the witty part.
No, you can keep that in there. Yeah.
So they've been called uncomfortable realism. They're really about people who are lost. They're witty. They're darkly funny. I found a review by the great Michiko Kakutani, former chief book critic for the New York Times, and she said that these stories attest to Ms. Moore's ability to map the emotional landscape of people in transition, people who have run smack up against the limits and limitations of their lives, people who feel themselves to be outsiders in their own families and marriages. And also, Ms. Moore writes with such psychological precision, such sharp, unsentimental knowledge of her characters' hopes and fears. So this is an older book. It's from 1998. But in anticipation of this episode, I had it ordered for the system. So we have three brand new copies. And please read it. But if you don't like it, just don't tell me you read it. Just
I'm so glad that we have some copies coming in.
Yeah.
Because I know I read on your Instagram that it was your favorite book. And so I remember looking for it because I trust your recommendations. And I usually love everything. So I'm excited.
I love the phrase uncomfortable realism.
Yeah. That's awesome.
No, I definitely want to read it too. And I think it takes a certain courage to say what your favorite book is, right? Because you're putting kind of yourself out there in a certain way. And I'm very interested in reading all of our favorite books.
So, Toby, I have a question for you, because I see for listeners out there, there's a bunch of post-it notes in the book. Have those been there for years, or are they recent?
No, I was rereading it recently, and I was just making note of particularly witty phrases that I liked in case I wanted to read a quote.
You were mentioning, Toby, that it's a collection of short stories. Is
there
one or two short stories that stand out of the others for you that are, say, the best of the best, or is that...
It's hard to say. I will note that they're heavy. There's a lot of themes of kind of death and dying, especially babies and young children. So keep that in mind. There's a story about parents whose child is in pediatric oncology. They call it pedoink. So yeah, keep that in mind.
That's the uncomfortable part.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's a lot of light and hope and wit and humor.
Sounds excellent. This is why I love this podcast, is that I was just saying that I think Toby and I have very similar tastes in books, and I really enjoy all of her suggestions. But everyone around this table, including Erica, who's not here today, has introduced me to books that I wouldn't normally read just on my own. And I think that's what a book club is often about, right? Mm-hmm. So I think I've always had like kind of a snobbery about some certain types of books. And so, I mean, even like reading The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, I mean, I really enjoyed it. Or Erica's suggestion of Long Way to a Small Angry Planet.
Yeah,
I think I wrote in my notes, I don't actually care about them arriving to the planet. Like, that doesn't, like, the way was super fun and enjoyable. But also introduction to graphic novels, too. Like, that, I hadn't really read a lot of graphic novels before. And so being introduced to Fun Home, and then actually one of my favorite books of recent years is a graphic novel called Belonging, which is about a German woman looking at her sort of uncomfortable German background and incorporating all these like historical documents and everything. So yeah, so I've just found my whole literary world has opened up.
Yeah, I would say the same thing. A lot of the books we read for the podcast, I would never read, just left to my own devices. And I have enjoyed so many of them, not all of them. I said at the outro to the last episode that we would also talk about books we hated or books we couldn't stand, I guess is what I said, which surprised everyone else on the podcast because no one thought we were talking about books we didn't like. But let's face it, we love books and we boost books and we think generally the reading is a great thing. But there are books that you won't like.
And books that you don't have to finish.
Yeah.
If you don't like them.
Yeah.
Walk away.
That was
by Cory Doctorow.
That's right.
That was an awesome book.
No, I'm just saying that's what Kirsten did.
Yeah. Sorry.
She walked away.
She walked away from Walk Away.
Come back to it. I don't know.
Yeah. But just on that front, I'm going to say of the books we've read on the podcast, the one I liked the least was The Huntress.
Oh.
Which I think others liked it more than I did, but I found it very cliched. and overdone.
I remember you saying that, actually.
Yeah, I whined about it endlessly episode.
That's true.
I don't normally like to whine that much about a book, but man, because I forced myself to finish it for the podcast.
Oh,
so.
Yeah.
I think I read books differently for this podcast than I do just reading for pleasure, because as I'm reading it, even if I am not enjoying it, I'm looking for things to talk about so that if I don't like it, at least I could sort of articulate why I don't, but also to be fair, say the things I do like about it, because I don't want to just come out and say that I just hate a book. But you know what book I hated? The Sisters Brothers. And I don't think I hid my dislike of it very much on the episode either. And I felt badly because when you did the author bio, he seemed like a nice dude.
I know. He's like in my top two of dinner invites. Like after I did his bio.
Yeah.
Also, okay. I've just got a massive crush on him.
Maybe you could just invite me for dessert, you know, so I could just show up at the end and say, hey, you know, could I meet him? But I don't think I could sustain pretending.
Have you read French Exit?
I haven't. No, exactly. I know you suggested that at the time.
At the time.
Really good. I said, noted. And here we are. Maybe it's on my TV read list.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Anyone else want to trash a book?
I think the one that comes to mind that we did on the podcast was The Ocean at the End of the Lane. And Neil Gaiman, like on paper, seems like he's like right up my alley, that urban fantasy kind of thing. And just everything that I've ever tried to read by him, it just like hasn't connected for whatever reason. And I found The Ocean at the End of the Lane seemed like a little cliche to me. So that was not...
That was also one podcast where it was just you
and
I.
Yes.
It was just you and I. And so, we were fairly new to it. And that's not the style of book that I usually read either. Mm-hmm. So I also was sort of like, I don't know if I really.
I think the two people that suggested it, Erica, myself, Erica was in England. I was in the hospital. I don't think it was probably one of our best episodes.
Because sometimes then if you would have explained a little bit more about what you like, then that influences me too, right?
Yeah.
In my enjoyment of a book.
Yeah, I will say in the early days of the podcast, when I was just doing the audio engineering, I read about half the books that were on the show. And a lot of times after hearing you guys talk about them, I was like, oh, I wish I had read it. You convinced me on several books to go back and give them a try just because just hearing them discussed, even though, you know, spoilers, they're talking spoilers through the whole thing. But it just, I don't know, hearing people talk about books in interesting ways, it's nice. You know, it's like watching a trailer for a movie, but more involved, more detailed.
And it's funny because I was always in charge of doing the biography, and I started to do deeper and deeper dives into the biographies. And I found it often added so much. And actually two of them, one of them being Patrick DeWitt and one of them being Jhumpa Lahiri, I was just listening to them again, and people around the table were saying, oh, that makes so much sense to know that about him or to know that about her. And so that was always a really interesting sort of added component, I think, to the podcast. And those two are definitely my top two dinner invites. Again, / crushes, Patrick DeWitt, because of just how he speaks. And I might be intimidated by him, but also maybe not. He also has a lighthouse tattoo, which also was like really intriguing because he always thought that he wanted to be a lighthouse keeper, which I always wanted to do. And then in this, you said something about how you had a theory about lighthouse keepers and we would circle back and come back to it. And I don't think we ever did.
I've also wanted to be a lighthouse keeper.
I've watched The Lighthouse with Willem Dafoe and what's his name? The new Batman.
Robert Pattinson.
Robert Pattinson, and that makes me not want to be
I have also seen that film, and it would deter anyone from even going within 10 feet of a lighthouse, I think.
Yeah, but fantastic film.
So am I supposed to reveal my lighthouse
theory? Well, I don't know. I'm just sort of like interested.
I mean, okay, just as a general sense, I often thought of librarians as lighthouse keepers. We're tasked with the responsibility of shedding light on the darkness. And we are also, based on maybe an outdated mode of delivering it, that we are trying to catch up to, just like lighthouse keepers. And sometimes in my dark moments, I feel like, are we going to be the last generation of librarians and lighthouse keepers? But then in my happier moments, I think, no, we will always find a way to shed the light of knowledge into the darkness of ignorance and rockiness.
Wow.
So that's it. I mean, I obviously didn't think it out. I would come up with a much more eloquent.
That's pretty good.
That's me.
Okay.
I can get behind that.
And yeah. Now that I know that this, what's his name? Patrick DeWitt. Now that I know he's got a lighthouse tattoo, man alive. This guy makes it tough to not like him.
Well, he also has a belligerent attitude towards the establishment.
All right.
Which, love. But Jhumpa Lahiri, remember from her bio, like, so brilliant. Again, super intimidating. Like, 3 master's degrees, a PhD in Renaissance studies. And she talked about how she was, like, between the two worlds of India and America. And just only recently, she's found her home to be Italy. Mm-hmm. So she lives in Italy now. She now only reads and writes in Italian. She wrote a New Yorker article called Teach Yourself Italian. She wrote it in Italian first, and then she translated it into English.
Oh, I was going to make a joke by saying that she wrote it in Italian and no one could understand it.
Anyway, just fascinating. So my 2 top authors that I would invite to dinner from my time on the podcast, putting it out there, Patrick DeWitt.
Get in touch, Patrick. We can give you her phone number.
I mean, I haven't been on the podcast for very long, so I don't have a large amount of books to choose from to a least favorite. I am trying to get better at DNFing, which in the book on Bookstagram, Tick Book Talk community means do not finish, did not finish. Mm-hmm. I have this thing that when I start a book, I have to keep going, even if it's terrible. So I recently DNF'd The Reading List. I think it was by Sarah Nisha Adams. I got about 100 pages in, and I was like, nope, I'm not enjoying this. I'm going to put it down. And that was big for me because I had already invested so much time.
Yeah, it's easier when you know after the first 2 pages that you don't like it.
Yeah, well, you've got to give it some time, you know? I read somewhere that you should give a book 100 pages minus your age. So the older you get, the less time you have to, like, for a book to grab you, which I kind of like.
That's similar to Stephen King's metric, which is 10% of the book.
Oh, okay.
So if it's a 200-page book, 20 pages. If it hasn't grabbed you in 20 pages, put it down, kind of thing. So, yeah. But I like the idea of making it less time, because we have less time the older we get.
Yeah, exactly. <It's true.
laughs> Less time for nonsense.
Aside from books, one of the things that we do a lot on the show are our nerd words. I can't remember how we came up with that. Was that your idea, Alan?
I think the idea of, having a word that we all shared might have come from me. But the name, I think, came from the old head of Winnipeg Public Library. Nerd words for word nerds came from Ed Cuddy, didn't it?
Oh. I'm not sure.
But if I'm remembering correctly, that's where the segment name came from.
Yeah, so we did put out on social media asking for people's favorite words, and we did get a bunch of responses, too. So I got a list here. DeHant said kibitz, which is Yiddish for silliness or joking around. Nevermore wrote crepuscular. I love it, I live it, so do my cats. Mm-hmm. Forgolina said sesquipedalian. I'm sure I mispronounced that. Sesquipedalian. Sesquipedalian. It rolls off the tongue if you practice it enough. Yeah, which means like long-winded and using big words. So it's a perfectly suited word for what it is. Bookish Knitter said catawampus. Bereth said cacophony, which is a great word.
Love that word.
Cacophony.
Orianushki said entitlement. Ekash said vermilion. Mm-hmm. Dehem said grimoire. Which definitely, especially if you're into fantasy fiction, is a wonderful word. Audrey Bissett said egregious, and Speak Story said clandestine.
Clandestine. Yeah. That's a good one.
I previously mentioned on the show that my favorite word of all time is suboptimal. So instead of that, because we already have that in an episode, I'm going to toss out a new word today, thrownness, which was a word Martin Heidegger, a philosopher, used, or he actually used the German word Geworfenheit, which rolls off the tongue a little easier, to describe a human individual's experience of existence as being thrown into the world. The arbitrary and capricious fact of existence that you are born into a specific family in a specific place and time in human history with all the resulting social conventions, duties, familial ties, and all of the suffering and frustration that comes along with these, none of which are your choice. The Doors used this concept in their 1971 song, Riders on the Storm. into this world we're thrown like a dog without a bone. And I like this word. It just encapsulates how I feel a lot. Just thrown into the world and you just have to deal with what's there. Because, you know, you didn't choose where you were going to land. Anyone else got favorite words they want to share today?
Well, I have a favorite Dennis word, nerd word. Because I always love when Dennis does the nerd word. I don't know. Dennis, you always do it last. And I don't know, you just sort of... And it's your voice too. And I feel like we're always like rapt, like listening to you. And then you somehow just have some, you know, wisdom kind of to tie it all up. So my favorite Dennis nerd word was from the Stranger in the Woods podcast. And the word was edge case. And you started off, and because edge case is a problem that occurs only at an extreme, maximum or minimum operating parameter. I'm like, what? Then you also brought up the concept of failing gracefully. And we were all, well, Eric and I was like, oh, I love it. Failing gracefully. Love it. But you spoke of it in relation to human societies, edge case and human societies. And we need to ensure that the things work on the margins, because then things will pretty much work everywhere else. And you were saying how Christopher Knight from the book was an edge case. And when you don't care about your edges, they become cracks that people can fall through. And just thought, yeah, if you don't care about the edges, then they become cracks people fall through. Anyway, I was like, oh, so profound. Anyway, I loved it. So that was, I had other ones too that you had done, like hatus and arbitrary. Arbitrary was a really good word too that you did. And anticipation too. But edge case was my favorite Dennis nerd word.
Oh, thank you for buttering me up like that.
That reminds me of a word that I was going to use as my nerd word today, but then completely forgot about, which is bezel, which is the magic interval when a confidence trickster knows he has the money he has appropriated, but the victim does not yet understand that he has lost it.
Ooh.
And I learned that word from Cory Doctorow, who we've done his books on the podcast. He was doing a Twitter thread about how Uber is a bezel. And so that was a very fun word to learn.
See, I thought you were going to say bezel as it relates to watches. And I thought Trevor was like lighting up with like something related to a watch.
A bezel is the outer rim of a watch. case. Sometimes it is a rotational on dive watches.
But I did bring another nerd word, which I guess isn't, I wouldn't claim this word as mine in any way, but it's Manitouabe Bedazige, which is Anishinaabemowin Ojibwe word, which means where the creator sits and brings light. And this is the name of the new RRC Polytechnic building downtown. So it's the first RRC Polytechnic building to receive an indigenous name. Yeah, so it's a word that I've had to focus on pronouncing, which I think is a good thing to do. And I found one of the things I found doing this podcast and originally doing the land acknowledgements at the beginning is the more you become familiar with indigenous words, the easier it is to pronounce them if you're coming across words that you're unfamiliar with, and the more you're able to learn them. So that's one of the skills that this podcast has helped me with.
Often for my nerd word, it's inspired by the book we've read. Sometimes it's not. So since we're not reading a specific book this month, my nerd word is sort of inspired by the podcast itself. So my word is synergy. Now, before I heard that. I heard that, Toby. That's later. Yes, it's a buzzword.
You might as well say pivot.
Yeah. When I hear someone that's kind of corporate use it, I roll my eyes and I stop listening. But... before it was a buzzword, it was an actual word, popular in the 90s. And yes, Stephen Covey in The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. That's the first place I discovered it. But it's a much older word. It was first found in print in 1632.
Oh.
And it can mean a lot of different things. Every organization, whether it's religion, politics, the environment, science, will give examples of synergy. But the simplest way to explain it is that the sum is greater than the parts. And I feel like with this podcast, every month I'm coming here with my B game and I'm not prepared and I feel like I'm just going to have dumb stuff to say. And then I sit around this table with super intelligent, funny people who have all got super interesting things to say. And by the end of it, somehow my A game comes out and we create something. And there's another definition of synergy where the sum of the parts creates something unexpected. And I feel like, I mean, okay, some months are better than others, but I feel like on a regular basis, we create a thing that's unexpected and better than the sum of the people that are sitting around it. So synergy, buzzword.
I like it.
Joey.
Okay. I really struggled to come up with a word that I felt worthy of this occasion. I kept coming back to anti-disestablishmentarianism, which, I don't know, does everyone discover this word in junior high and then think you've like...
That's my favorite song from Mary Poppins.
Think you've like, you know,
you've
reached...
That's my favorite song from Eminem.
Reached the pinnacle of intelligence because it's like the longest word and you know it. But for a really long word, it's a very boring meaning. It's just a 19th century British political movement that advocates that the church should continue to receive government money. So very boring. But what I did find interesting was that it entered pop culture in 1955 when a 12-year-old spelled it correctly on a $64,000 question. And this led me into a bit of a wormhole about what is the longest word in the English language. And there's a lot of debate. A lot of people think anti-disestablishmentarianism isn't because it's not in common usage, so it's not in many major dictionaries. So the longest word in major English language dictionaries is pneumono ultramicroscopic silico volcano coniosis.
Also which, in common usage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a lung disease caused by the inhalation of very fine ash and sand dust. And like with a lot of medical words, you can really break it down into its parts. Pneumono is lungs, ultra beyond, microscopic, referring to the fineness of particulates, silico, silicate dust, volcano, dust, coni is also dust, and osis, which is a suffix to indicate a medical condition. So that gets you pneumono, ultramicroscopic, silico, volcano, coniosis. I have practiced
that
a lot.
Sorry, I just got to say, you did an awesome saying that word.
Thank you. However, this is not the longest word in the English language. The longest word, and this again, maybe, maybe not, but it's super long, is a chemical name. It's for a type of protein. And I realize the podcast is an audio medium, so people won't be able to see this, but this is 38 double-sided pages, single-spaced, of this word. And it's hard to believe that we're not being punked and that this is actually a word and not just an assortment of letters.
But is it in major dictionaries, though?
It is
a major dictionary.
There is a video. It's over 3 hours long of someone saying this word. So you can look it up on YouTube if you're having trouble sleeping one night. But yeah, there you go. If anyone wants to look at that.
That reminds me of the ant language from Lord of the Rings when they're talking with the ants and the ants talk so slow and they're like, why are you talking so slow? The ants are like, well, if you have anything important to say, you should say it slowly.
Mm-hmm. How long is the video where the person tells?
It's over 3 hours.
Oh. It's a very important word.
Yeah.
Yeah. We should all learn this word.
Yeah.
And learn how to say it. Oh, my goodness.
I was just going to jump in just to say that I talked about my favorite Dennis nerd word, but my favorite nerd word of my own from the podcast was interrobang, just because it had such a profound influence on my life and a tattoo that I have. Of the interrobang. And
you
know
what?
I use the interrobang all the time now because I've got it programmed into my phone so I can just use it because I just find it really a helpful way of expressing myself, sort of this like questioning excitement.
Now I want a tutorial about how to program that into my phone.
Yeah. You can do it. You can do it. Bring back the interrobang.
Do we want to talk about favorite moments from the podcast?
Yes.
Because I had one I'm going to share. I'll see if I can find the audio clip to add it in later. But in the early days, we would do little promos for library programs. And we didn't normally share with each other what was going to be in each promo. We just wrote up our own thing and then recorded it. So it was always a bit of a surprise to see what everyone would come up with. And one day, we did one, and Alan had one. And I can't even remember right now what it was for, but... He just launched into this monologue. It was breathless. It was propulsive. It kept moving forward.
Hi, I'm Alan. I'm the branch head librarian at Transcona Library. You may remember me from such Time to Read podcast episodes as Episode 2, Middlesex, and Episode 4, The Ocean at the End of the Lane. People on the street often stop me and ask, Alan, you always seem to know what's going on at Winnipeg Public Library. How do you do it? And I would reply with three simple words, at the library. I'd click my heels together and continue along my merry way. This worked out well, or so I thought, until my friend Gary asks me,
Hey Alan, you always seem to know what's going on at Winnipeg Public Library. How do you do it?
And I replied, as I always do, at the library.
So you have to go to the library to find out what's going on at the library?
I thought Gary was just being Gary. Then I thought about it for a moment, and that's when my stomach sank and sirens began going off in my head. Gary thought I literally meant at the library, when what I really meant was at the library, subtitle, Your Guide to Winnipeg Public Library, the bi-monthly brochure available in print and online by Winnipeg Public Library that has a membership guide, lists all of WPL's upcoming programs and events, tells you the opening hours of each of our 20 branches, and which locations have free Wi-Fi. Spoiler alert, all of them.
Are you okay there, Alan?
Yeah, I'm okay, Gary.
Because you just kind of spaced out there for a minute.
I know, Gary. I realized I need to explain to you. In fact, I need to explain to a lot of people that at the library doesn't always literally mean at the library.
You mean because of Winnipeg Public Library's wide selection of ebooks and other online resources?
And when he finished, he looked at us and we were all just kind of sitting there. And he said, Oh, I guess that didn't, I guess that wasn't as good as I hoped it was. And we all burst into laughter at this point because we had been holding it in the whole time because we were afraid of disrupting his rhythm. It was the funniest thing I've ever heard in person in my life. I just want to thank you, Alan, for being able to write something that was so hilarious and still got a point across, too. That was my very favorite moment.
I think a favorite moment for me was when the pandemic hit in March 2020. I mean, that wasn't my favorite moment. I mean, let's be clear. But what happened was, Dennis figured out a way that we could still record. And we would record by being in our own homes, because at that point we were working from home, and we would connect over Zoom or Microsoft Teams or something, so we'd see each other, but we would record our own voices on our own audio device.
I do have to make a slight correction. Kirsten's son helped. He was working on a similar type of thing. So
yes,
we
credit to Isaac on as well, of course. Yeah. Yes. And we would record them all, and then we would upload them and email them to Dennis, and he would use his wizardry to patch them all together to the untrained ear, or even to the trained ear. It sounded like we were all in the same room, which was fantastic, except for one time. I can't remember if it was for Hound of the Baskervilles or maybe it was Little Women. It would be great to find just a clip of this. At the end of the recording, Kirsten said, oh no. Well, she might use stronger language.
Probably.
And what happened was her recorder did not record her audio. So we had myself, Erica, and Dennis's part of the entire hour talking away with blank spots where Kirsten's voice should be. And we didn't know what to do. Dennis had the sensible solution of, let's just re-record the whole thing. It's going to be way too much work. But Kirsten said, no, I can do this. Give me the finished thing with the three voices, and I will listen to it, and I will recreate my responses and my comments. And Dennis was like, that'll never work. And you know what? It worked. And Kirsten emailed her file to Dennis. He was able to stitch it in. And when you listen to it, you would not know that Kirsten recorded her part a week after everyone else did. So I think that's one of my favorite moments behind the scenes.
Yeah, and I really did not think that could be done. Like, Kirsten kept insisting, no, I can do this, I can do this. And I'm like, no, you can't, Kirsten. This is an impossible thing. No one can do this.
Do it all over again.
And she did it. And I mean, sometimes, you know, she didn't fill the gap that was there. So it wasn't the same stuff she said, but it was really, really good. And I don't think anyone noticed anything weird about it. Yeah, it was very impressive work,
That's
Kirsten.
I don't know if I'm an expert, but I am an enthusiast.
I'll you say. Know what kind of pipe he smoked the yeah. most?
And do you know where he kept his tobacco?
No.
In a Persian slipper.
Oh my That's gosh. Right.
A Persian slipper.
Maybe I'll put a picture
like a
up.
Shoe?
Exactly. Yes, I'll maybe put a picture of it up on our show notes.
Oh, sure. Sherlock Holmes.
I hope you guys are remembering all the things you say you're going to put in the show notes for when you
yeah, yeah, making notes, show notes, making notes. My sort of favorite creative experience as a team on the podcast was when we did the poetry podcast. I was really pushing for a poetry podcast. I wanted to do one, and Alan was not that sure. Anyway, I thought it was a great podcast. But one of the things that we did beforehand was Trevor suggested we do this game where we write a poem as a group. And we started off, I can't even remember really how it went, but we each wrote a line, and then it went to the next person. And then we read out the poem. So can I just read out a couple of the poems? Because as they were being read out, I was like almost in tears. I was like, oh my God, that was so good. Oh, like I was just so like incredulous. Here's the first one. I tell myself I would reach across and touch you, but would you feel it? The body remembers, but the body remains not. The only thing left is the hunger. I mean, come on. Okay, one more. The frozen ponds mirrors my heart. I stand like Narcissus, mesmerized by the unyielding ice. Why, oh why, do I stand alone, left here among the cruel gray and white? I mean, come on. That
we
was such a fun...
publish a book.
I know. Do a whole book's worth. I love that. Anyway, that was my favorite sort of memory of us creating something like right in the moment. It was fun. Good job, Trevor.
Again, I haven't been on the podcast very long, so I don't have such a pool of experiences to pull from, but I do...
You represent the future, Toby. You're the youth. You're the youth and the hope.
I did like a lot when you, Trevor, misunderstood what was happening in Lovecraft Country with a character and an alien. So that was fairly recent, so we don't need to explain the whole thing, but yeah.
Did she have sex with the alien? And was that her baby? Like what are we supposed to, like, is that what, like, what?
Like Ida you're talking about?
Yeah, Ida. Because okay. She's like, this is my child, no. Or whatever. What happened? Like, that's how I read it. No. No, tell me what happened.
That was like an animal from that world.
Yeah,
that was like an egg or something like that that she gave to Hippolyta.
Yeah, I think she was trying to kill Hippolyta with it.
She wanted to ensure Hippolyta wouldn't reveal where she was.
You see, I didn't get that at all. I thought it was way darker that Ida was having sex with that thing on the beach and then produced this egg, and then she wanted the thing to live. Now, obviously, that's probably not what happened.
To write your own fan fiction, yeah. Where that happens.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Just wait for that.
Yeah, Trevor's interpretations of literary works is often as interesting as the work itself.
Well, you know, slightly related to that, and we probably will never do this book on the podcast, but I really love the fact that Toby's mentioned Ice... Was it? Ice Planet Barbarians is a book, which does involve actual alien sex, I'm told.
Oh, not my God. You have no idea.
And the thing is, what I love about this is like Toby is kind of treating Dennis and I like older relatives. she's giving us lots
I'm
of warnings.
To warn
yeah,
you.
You're saying it's very graphic. It's very smutty. And at one point you wrote, I think it's going to be very sexy, but you italicized sexy in the email as if to like say, please don't hold this against me like you held. Love in the Time of Cholera against me. Like, or something. So having said that, my copy of Ice Planet Barbarians has come in. Yeah, I'm very excited. I almost took a picture of it and sent it to the two of you, like, ah, yes. Yeah. I do plan to read it very soon. I'm ready to read this. I'm ready for some ice, some planets, and barbarians and stuff happening. So I'm looking forward to it.
Sexy.
Yeah.
Sexy.
There are scenes where there's relations.
Yeah. We're told that it's a kissing book. And, you know, I hope it's not too shocking to our delicate sensibilities. Yeah. But I'm next in line after Trevor and Toby have their copy. So I'm waiting right now.
I will try to read the book.
I've finished mine already. Delicately. I'm just waiting. I need to just hold on to it for few more days, but I can't talk about that book without blushing. Like, seriously, you guys, like, you're
oh my gosh, okay. Yeah,
I'm ready to be so shocked and appalled by everything.
Oh man, you're in for it. If you haven't read any I don't know what your experience with reading romance is, but this is pretty
hot for something that's on a nice planet.
Yeah.
So I guess I have to come up with some favorite memories, which
you don't have to. If they were all traumatic, you can just leave them behind.
I left for a reason. No. So I think I can break it down into like a beginning, a middle, and an end memory, or pseudo memory in the end, maybe. But I think about when I think about this podcast is kind of how it came about. And I think there are about four of us, me, Kirsten, Trevor, and Erica, who were, I think, all independently thinking that the library should do a podcast. And I remember Erica posting on Facebook, like, the library should do a podcast. And then my response was, we should talk, period. And then that was kind of got the snowball rolling of kind of bringing everybody together. And then we heard Dennis had some audio editing skills, so we roped him in. And we made a proposal and we got the green light to go ahead with it. And just the whole process of putting it together was fantastic. One of the most fun projects I've ever done in my life. Which, like, going to the middle, I think one of the big highlights for me was the live episode that we did at the Goodwill and putting on a live show. And I didn't think I'd ever be on a stage for a podcast before, like, living all my fantasies of when I listen to a podcast. I could do that. I could be on a podcast. And Trevor did such a fantastic job of coming up with the... I don't even remember what the game was, but he had a little trivia game for us to play on stage, which was fantastic. And then the tail end of that is the food critic from the Winnipeg Free Press happened to be reviewing the restaurant there and caught our show and wrote about it in the next day's Free Press, which was fantastic. And then I think to end it off, my favorite memory towards the end is when I left the podcast, but the fact that the podcast kept going. So is really exciting to see something that you started and going back to Trevor's words is it's bigger than the sum of its parts because some of its parts can leave and the podcast can keep going, which is very exciting. So I was very excited to see Toby coming on and having a new host who wasn't part of the original crew and just like taking it and running with it is super satisfying to watch and see.
So normally we include a segment where we talk about a book that you might like if you like the book that we just read. But since we weren't talking about a specific book this time, we thought we'd just talk about books that are on our to-read lists, things that we still intend to read but maybe haven't gotten to yet. I think I mentioned in the last episode the Truth and Reconciliation Commission report is on my to-read list. It's been there for a while. I still haven't gotten to it. And, of course, Ice Planet Barbarians.
Well, that's now on my to-be-read list.
I think it's the must-read book of the season. But, you know, be careful because it's kind of spicy, I've heard.
Yeah, it's a little romantic.
Just a wee bit. Anyone else got stuff they've been meaning to read or got coming up?
On the Facebook. On the Facebook. On the Facebook group, Gabriella Logan said that she is always wanting to read Dead Souls by Nikolai Gogol. And I thought that was interesting because that author, Nikolai Gogol, was referenced in Jhumpa Lahiri's book, The Namesake, because the main character was named Gogol after the author. So I thought, Gabriella, if you haven't listened to the episode, we discussed that back in March 2019. You might enjoy that as a companion when you read Dead Souls.
I'll also just jump in there for a quick second. After we did that podcast, I went and read a collection of Gogol's short stories, and they were fantastic. So I would encourage to read his work.
And then another person who's written to us before, Amr, she says, Ulysses by James Joyce.
Oh. Mm.
So, yes. Doorstop.
I looked at Ulysses once to see if I had this list of, 100 best books of the century or something like that. And I looked at that and I didn't even have to get 10% of the way through in before I knew I wasn't going to finish that one. That's a challenge.
Someone once told me that you have to read that book sitting up at a table if you're ever going to read it. So.
Not in a pub?
No, not in a bed. Don't get comfortable.
Yeah. I'll springboard off Doorstop for mine because people commented on Infinite Jest and they're like, we hope that's not your favorite book, Alan. It is not because I haven't read it. It is massive. It comes in at, it's Infinite Jest by David Foster Wallace. I don't know if I said that. It comes in at just under 1,100 pages. And the reason I want to read this book is because I watched a movie called The End of the Tour with Jason Segel and Jesse Eisenberg, which is all about a Rolling Stones writer who goes to interview David Foster Wallace. And it's kind of like a bromance-y movie that's pretty epic and made me want to read this book. But this book is huge and it's dense, and you sort of have to read Hamlet before you read this book. Because if anyone remembers the first line of Hamlet, which I haven't read, so also on my to-read list, the first line of Hamlet is, "Who's there?" And the first line of Infinite Jest is, "I am seated in an office surrounded by heads and bodies." And that's a direct call to Hamlet, and that's how dense this book is, and it's over 1,000 pages. So that's my to-read list.
Personally, I love a challenge. I'm the type of person that, like, if I put a book on my to-read list, I'm going to read it. So I've read Moby Dick, and I've read Anna Karenina, and, like, House of Leaves, and I have no interest in reading Infinite Jest, or, like, Ulysses, or Gravity's Rainbow, or any of those others. So I took a bit of a different route to this question with some books that are coming out that I'm looking forward to reading. One is, if you know Sarah Polley, she's a Canadian filmmaker, writer, actor. She has a collection of essays coming out this year. It's called Run Towards the Danger. I think it's going to be excellent. As a bit of an aside, her next film project is an adaptation of Miriam Taves' Women Talking.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, so that's going to be excellent. And then one of my favorite books of all time is Circe by Madeline Miller. And Madeline Miller writes books very slowly. She's only written two books. Song of Achilles came out in 2011. Circe came out in 2018. They're both fabulous. And she will be writing a new book about Persephone, which will come out sometime, but just write faster, Madeline Miller. so eventually there will be a Madeline Miller book about Persephone.
When you mentioned Moby Dick a minute ago, it made me think a few years ago, Joe Hill, author, ran a Twitter book club for books that he's always wanted to read but needed support. And it was great because throughout the whole month of, like, say, I don't know, January of whatever year it was, people would be reading Moby Dick and he would put questions up chapter to chapter. So I actually read along with Joe Hill that book. And thank goodness I did, because if I didn't have that support, I don't think I would have. When you get to that chapter about halfway through where it's just like a history of the different types of whales, I was like, what is happening? So, I don't know if this book counts for my to-be-read list, because I've technically started it, but I only read about 3 or 4 pages a year, because I take this I take this book camping every summer, and I think I'm going to read it. And I get settled in the hammock, and something always happens, right? I have to go and do something, or the tent's fallen down, or our daughter's missing, or whatever it is. So it's a biography, Churchill, Walking with Destiny by Andrew Roberts. So it's obviously a biography of Winston Churchill. So I've gotten to the point where he just got back from South Africa. He's thinking of running for parliament. And, you know, I think he's got a future.
Spoilers.
So that's on my to-be-read, also kind of reading list.
I didn't prepare for this question.
That's okay.
Sorry.
That's fine.
I have a whole list of to-be-read now, you know.
Ice Planet Barbarians.
Yes, Ice Planet Barbarians, Gogol short stories, the Laurie Moore book, which was already on my list. Also, Katrina Vermette's new one, too, Strangers, which I think is on lots of people's to-be-read list. So, yeah.
Yeah.
That's okay, because if someone else wants to read it, you can also want to read it.
Okay. Oh, I thought we were...
No. Oh, no. You're just going to read that one. Shoot.
Well, that's how I am at family dinners, when we go out for dinner, and if somebody orders something, and I'm like, I was going to order that. Oh. Like, nobody can order the same thing. Hmm. Everyone has to order.
You can't copy me before I do it.
That's right. Yeah. Yes. So,
Can I add a to be viewed to this, I guess?
Mm, well, sure. As this month's host, I think you can do whatever you like, Alan.
I just want to throw in a plug for one of the projects that we're working on at Red River College. It's called Conversations with Authors, a Truth and Reconciliation series. And it's in partnership with Indigenous Education and Library and Academic Services. And so this would be available for all of our listeners. You can go to our website, library.rrc.ca/conversations, and you can we've done two so far, and the most recent one is with Isaac Murdoch. He wrote Trails of the Nebuzuhu and Other Creation Stories, and so it's just a conversation with the author about their process. Isaac goes into a lot of his journey in becoming an Indigenous storyteller, and it's like a fascinating interview. So that's library.rrc.ca/conversations.
We can put a link to that in our notes, show notes.
Sounds really good.
Does anyone have anything else they want to toss in before we close out?
Are we going to schedule our 100th episode at this point, just to make sure our calendars are clear? Or is that 4 years?
I think we'll hold off on that for the moment.
All right, good. I like to be highly effective.
Yes. So unfortunately, that's all the time we have for this month. Thank you so much for joining us, dear readers. For us, celebrating our 50th episode was a pretty big deal, but we don't want to rest on our laurels, so next month we've got something special lined up. We've previously read and discussed Son of a Trickster and Trickster Drift by Eden Robinson. For our next episode, we will finally complete the Trickster trilogy as we discuss Return of the Trickster. And as if that wasn't enough, we just may have another special guest joining the discussion. I'm not sure I can properly convey to you how excited we are about this one. Have some thoughts about books we're reading or should read? Write them down on a slip of paper, put the paper under your pillow, and send them to us through your dreams. Or email us. I'd recommend the emails. You can find all of our contact info at the bottom of the page at wpl-podcast.winnipeg.ca. You can also find all our past episodes and discussion questions there too. If you haven't already, subscribe to Time to Read on your favorite podcasting service and maybe leave us a review. Tell your book-loving friends about us too. And until next time, make sure you find
Time to Read.
Episode, we are celebrating books, nerd words, and the fact that we've made it to 50 episodes. I'm Alan from the Idea Mill, and I'm only here because I know how to edit audio. Across the table from me is...
No.
I thought you were going to interrupt me.
I was going to wait for you to say your I'm Alan part.
Oh, okay.
But don't say you're from the Idea Mill. That'll be terribly confusing.
Okay, we'll do from the top.
No. You can just go from the I'm
really
Alan.
Is good at editing audio. Yeah.
Okay. I'm Alan from Red River College Polytechnic, and I'm here because I know how to edit audio.
Stop. Oh, my God.
Just do the I'm Alan part, and then across the table from me is...
Oh, okay.
And then there'll be a little pause.
Gotcha.
This is what happens when we don't script it. Exactly.
Yeah. Gotcha.
This is why every episode we have two or three rehearsals.
Yeah. There we go. Okay.